Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
So this is a requested topic, and it's kind of fun to do that. It's a kind of discipline, you know. Somebody says, "Please talk about this," and it's like, "Okay." So, so the topic of tonight's talk is Buddha nature pervades the whole universe, existing right here now. What's that? I was asked to talk about what's Buddha nature. And so we're going to explore that together tonight. And I'd like to begin by a kind of a rolling meditation running through the sutra service. Because as I was sitting just now, I realized that you could say that this very question is the leitmotif of our sutra service. And so if you think about, I won't necessarily completely go in order, but beginning with our first dedication of gratitude, Buddha nature pervades the whole universe, existing right here now. The wind blows, waves fall on the shore. And then we have Hakuin Ekaku's praise song for meditation, which begins, "All beings are Buddha by nature, just as water and ice are the same. Without water, there's no ice. Outside of beings, no Buddha." So in a way, it seems to be saying Buddha has being nature. And then Tore Zenji, Bodhisattva Vow, starts off, "When I look deeply into the real form of the universe, everything reveals the mysterious truth of the Tathagata, Buddha nature, again. This truth never fails. Every moment and in every place, things can't help but shine with this light." And then we sing our Guanyin Sutra and we say, "We are born with awakening. We grow with awakening. And in our second dedication, we begin, "All living beings are one seamless body and pass quickly from dark to dark." And then folding back to the Prajnaparamita Heart Sutra, the heart of our understanding, we have Avalokiteshvara clearly seeing all five skandhas as empty. And then as it rolls on, you know, "Listen, Shariputra, all things are essentially empty." And then there's this wonderful scrolling list of all things, yeah? We have not born, not destroyed, not stained, not pure, without loss, without gain. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, sensation, perception, no eye, no ear, no nose, invoking everything, right? It all just comes right into the room in its emptiness. Empty. You can't really have the emptiness without calling it all forth. So, what's going on? If this is so much what we're about here, what are we about? So clearly there's something important, something helpful about it. Because the sutras, the purpose of the sutras are for us to awaken to our true nature. Yeah? Otherwise, we would not sing them, actually. And what about it? So I'd like to start, actually, with what Buddha nature is not. It's not a tool with which to bludgeon yourself and others, as in, they say everyone has Buddha nature, but I seem to be full of pus, not sweetness and light. And the same certainly goes for you. So it's not that, I think. And it's not an ideal for which to strive. You know, I don't have a bracelet that says, "What would Buddha do?" Or, you know, if I act according to my Buddha nature, I will no longer have a problem with my significant other leaving dirty dishes in the sink, which I got to tell you still happens even when there's no significant other. You're kind of it. In fact, I'm sure I'll be able to get them to wash the dishes without ruffling a single feather, right? When I get my Buddha nature on. No, I don't think it's that either. And it's not, in my experience, a vision of perfection to inspire you on your path. You know, a promise of perfectibility. Like, my ultimate nature is to be a perfectly enlightened being, right? So I'll keep practicing for lifetimes and eventually I'll get there. I'll study the obstacles that keep me from manifesting that. I'll remove those obstacles, and then I will be able to do this life right. Yeah. So, in obvious and more subtle ways, we seem to want it to be something. You know, we want Buddha nature to be something, something useful. You know, won't it fix what's wrong with my life, please? And I think that this may actually be one reason that the early followers of the Buddha Way used the images of a foot, not a man. Because thinking that there is an I, that there is a self, and that my job is to transform myself into that. Well, Trungpa Rinpoche describes that as theism. And he says the problem with theism is not that we think there's a God, it's that we think there's an I to worship the God. But maybe both. So, if it's not like that, if it won't take, if Buddha nature is not something, a thing, won't take that form, it brings up some statements I recently came across. That one, the mind that knows, our wakeful awareness, is formless. And Okumura saying, the true character of reality has but one characteristic, an absence of character. Has but one characteristic, an absence of character. Huh. So tonight I'd like to entertain a different way of working with this idea of human nature. If it's not that ideal that I'm striving for, if it's not the thing that's going to let me perfect myself and fix my life, what is it? What if Buddha nature is just not like this at all? What if we consider the words as possibly true? What if we just entertain the possibility that Buddha nature pervades everything, existing right here now? So what does pervade everything and exist right here now? The wind blows, waves fall on the shore. The bell rings, people stand up. It rains or it doesn't rain. If it rains hard enough, there's a little puddle at the end of the third pew. And you'll find it during walking meditation with your feet. And there is mercy for all of us who keep looking for love in all the wrong places. What if the vision of some imagined perfection that we make out of Buddha nature is a trap? The enemy of our awakening. Even our practices designed to enlighten us may have this trap embedded in them. Like, the Buddha in me bows to the Buddha in you. Well, you know, perhaps this can sometimes be very skillful. But to me, it feels so remote. The Buddha in me bows to the Buddha in you. As if I can't find you worthy of a bow unless I imagine you perfected. It might feel more real for me to say, the idiot in me bows to the idiot in you. May we become a little less idiotic each day. Or, the anxiety in me bows to the anxiety in you. It took us both some guts to get up this morning. Or, the tender heart in me bows to the tender heart in you. We don't, either of us, dare to show it very much, but I feel it in you and I feel it in me. What really feels most real to me is, I bow to you, I bow to you. Because you are you, and amazing. A mystery. An invisible universe right here in front of me. You with your clear eyes and your intelligent hands. And I notice that one foot toes out a little bit as you stand there. And when I look right to you, I see this, that you're beautiful, and my heart leaps at the wonder of it. And in this moment, as you, as all of us, fill the field of my awareness, you, in this stone room under a gray sky, you are all that I am. There isn't something else. This is what's here. Here we are, just as we are. The stone being perfectly stone, the rain perfectly rain. You sitting there, me here with my buffalo. And at the moment when I realize this, at any moment, when this is the reality expressed in my mind, this flow of experience, at this moment, there is nothing extra. There's nothing missing. Nothing I must get right. What a relief. And that is the delightful taste of freedom, of peace. I can just relax in the Buddha-ness of this. Body, heart, and mind, setting endless heartache to rest. Knowing I can't fall out of this and you can't fall out of this. This is just the big, endless dream of the universe. No matter what happened 5 minutes ago, let alone yesterday, right now the earth is under me, the sky is over me, and we are here. The shout of this actual body. We are free to create whatever happens next, and next, and next, together. This is Buddha nature, as I understand it. Can you feel the ocean of being that powers each bit of this? Awesome. Incomprehensible. How can this possibly be? And why would I not gratefully accept this gift? The wind blows, waves fall on the shore. How many waves? Wave after wave after wave. And mercy finds us on the dark and broken roads. We have time for some conversation.
curious about the the Buddha nature pervades the whole universe. Buddha nature is the whole universe. You know, that's what comes up for me. That's what I was, when you're saying that, I was trying to see the pervading of the universe when it is the whole universe. How does it pervade itself? You know, that bit. And also, what about when I'm surrounded by a vast array of assholes?
Yeah.
Buddha nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pervades the whole universe.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Because I find joy in that, you know, that ease and that relaxation. Even in that, you know, when I don't get on myself for seeing nothing but assholes, you know, it's like, oh yeah, this too. And then I don't take it so serious.
If it's not my job to get them under control.
Yeah.
Or get my feelings about them under control. If I quit at that point, you know, I refuse to take responsibility for running the universe at this moment. Then everything's fine.
Yeah.
I can just be me and they can just be assholes. Which doesn't mean that I have to don't respond, right?
Right.
But it just means that my response is not directed towards me getting the universe under control.
Alright, this is still extremely muddy to me, so if I do decide to take the universe on and get it under control, is that Buddha nature?
Yeah, and you will suffer.
And so what's the difference between Buddha nature and whatever we call human nature?
Does there need to be a difference?
Well, we're labeling something that's pretty heavy in our literature, liturgy, and I'm not understanding. I'd love any help.
Does there need to be a difference between Buddha nature and human nature?
I guess I don't really understand human nature either, but it seems like there ought to be.
They each have their own context for which we talk about human nature and Buddha nature. That's how I think of it.
Mm. So would you say a little bit more about what there ought to be a difference?
I'm guessing why would you decide there's a certain nature that has the name of a important being, sounds sort of higher and mightier than just us humans have this nature, but Buddha has this nature.
Uh-huh. And that, as I, in my experience, that's the trap. That the minute we label Buddha nature as not this, then we have put it very far away. And it's unattainable.
Okay. So then it's sounding like then there is something to attain.
If we make it something distant, then we make it something to attain. So say, but would you say a little bit more about the feeling behind this? What's the, because you're talking about your own actual experience here, which I appreciate.
I mean, I guess just my experience and not understanding what it is. I have just, there's a thing, but.
Ah, What if it's not a thing? Because if we talk about the nature of things, you know, the nature of birds is to sing, you know, the nature of this bird is to build this kind of a nest. And what, and so you know that part that says, outside of beings, no Buddha? That's kind of an interesting statement, isn't it? So what if the expression of the song of the wren and the song of the magpie, without those, without the wren to sing the wren song and the magpie to sing the magpie song, there's no singing.
Let me jump in.
Thank you.
I guess one of the hard parts for me has been that human nature seems to encompass these base qualities that we have: greed and domination, hatred, vindictiveness. And where I want to go with those relative to Buddha nature is to say that those are delusions, that those are delusional, and that they create suffering, and that they're the result of unskillful means. And so they are not Buddha nature. But I think I'm growing into, finally, a bigger understanding that. And some of it, you know, for me has to do with incorporating teleological reasoning, evolutionary perspectives on these things, because these qualities of human nature evolved because they were functional, because they allowed this animal to use, you know, a large frontal cortex and an opposable thumb to get what we needed to stay alive. And so these qualities are not evil or good, they're just what we are. They're just the magpie singing.
And in fact, they're the means of our awakening.
And exactly. And so, that's right. They're the means of our awakening. So, and even the delusions, and actually delusion is too much of a concept. Even the things that we do that cause us to suffer so much are also the means of our awakening.
Yeah.
And they are such an opportunity. And so in that respect, it makes it easier for me to see that as Buddha nature, as part of our Buddha nature. Mm-hmm. So human nature and Buddha nature are the same and can incorporate all of those base qualities that have screwed us up and continue to screw us up so much.
They cause us suffering. And we define that. We decide that because there is suffering, it's not okay. Mm-hmm. There's this, some of you may have seen this because somebody posted it. There's this interesting little set of observations from Leonard Cohen that I brought along with me. They go like this. Now, one, there's a feeling that we have sometimes of betraying some mission that we were mandated to fulfill and being unable to fulfill it. Does that sound familiar? And then coming to understand that the real mandate was not to fulfill it. And that the deeper courage was to stand guiltless in the predicament in which you find yourself. Isn't that an interesting statement? It's sort of saying, even your failure is it. Maybe our failure is what we are meant to do in order for, maybe that is the nature of our awakening. It's like, that was a failure. Yeah? And to stand courageously in the middle of our failures, like that, of the predicament, of the misery, of failing what we thought was our mandate, our task. Yeah? So the second one says, sometimes when you no longer see yourself as the hero of your own drama, expecting victory after victory, you understand deeply that this is not paradise. Somehow we, especially the privileged ones, have somehow embraced the notion that this veil of tears is perfectible. Yeah, that it's not supposed to be this way. We're not supposed to be hurting. We're not supposed to be failing. We're not supposed to be anxious, fundamentally anxious about being stable in life. Yeah? That you're going to get it all straight. Yeah? That it's perfectible. You're going to get it all straight. I found that things became a lot easier when I no longer expected to win. Yeah? If I'm going to win, then that's Buddha nature. Yeah? When I'm a loser, that can't be Buddha nature. And the third one, you'll never untangle the circumstances that brought you to this moment. Isn't that interesting? You'll never untangle the circumstances that brought you to this moment. But you're a warrior. Arise now like a warrior. You are caught up in circumstances that life determined for you. Stand up and do your duty.
That's the inner call?
That's the inner call. Yeah. Go with her.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
You're calling the Zen Master.
Sarah, what came out for me, you started by taking us through the sutra service and picking out lines that seemed to me mainly had to do with emptiness. But what you came to in your talk was not emptiness, but fullness.
Yeah.
Like it's all overflowing and full.
Yeah. And empty.
Empty.
Yeah. Yeah. The plenum as emptiness. Yes, I noticed that too. Thank you for pointing that out. And, you know, that Hakuin's poem goes on to say, much more if you turn the light inward and witness your own nature, yeah? Your nature, which is empty nature. Yeah. And empty nature is this, right?
So I was thinking about this and sitting with this and with what you guys were talking about too, non-duality came forward as if we look at all of these seemingly juxtapositions, this is base, this is not, they're expressions of each other, they're parts of each other, they're other parts of the coin of each other, there's the cutting of the diamond, they're all in there. It's all complete in that. And then, so what is non-duality, how to be in the moment and non-duality.
Or in duality. You know, with outside from beings, no Buddha, is saying there can't, this empty nature, this vastness, this Buddha stuff, this pure awakening, can't be anything without us to be it. And us being it includes all of those assholes and all of our failures and, yeah?
Yeah.
And our beauties.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got to bring it right into that very world of dualities, don't we? Because otherwise, it can't move. Because emptiness is unmoving.
Unmoving. Not unconditional, unmoving.
Too big to be seen as moving.
Sir? So how do we talk about it without turning it into a theism?
Without what?
Without turning this, what we're talking about, into a theism.
Yeah. Well, I've been thinking about this because I also was listening to Ken Wilber this weekend talking about states and stages, that we have the states of concentration, states of awakening, and we have stages of growing up. You know, we have developmental stages. And how we talk about this is going to be different.
Every stage is complete.
Absolutely. So if we get theistic about it, then we're at the stage of being theistic about it.
Don't draw the line. Yeah.
It's the way I see it.
Okay.
Anyway, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that.
So one day, I might just need to pray. One day, I might not.
I think it's helpful to remember that Buddha nature, Buddha refers to awakening. It's a verb, more than a noun.
Yes.
And so awakened nature, if we use that instead of the word Buddha nature, it doesn't make it as much of an object.
Absolutely.
Because when we say Buddha, it's like God. Oh, we got all these things that are associated with that.
Right.
But if you look at it as awakening, well then, okay, so there's different levels of awakening.
Yeah. Well, there are different kinds of awakening.
Mildly awake, we can be fully awake.
Yeah, we can be asleep and awake. Yeah, all of that. Yeah, thank you. That was kind of where I've been trying to go with this, is that it's this what's happening. It's what's happening, right? But the nature of what's happening is it's awakening. Yeah. Frank, is that you?
No, I was just enjoying the two things about stages and what John, what you're bringing in, how each of those is complete.
That awakening is complete even when it may look very different at different, like that awakening of the delusions. You know,
yes.
That if we recognize that the delusions are their own kind of awakening. And they may not look like what we usually think of as awakening. Pretty.
So let me clarify something. So delusions lead to awakening, or delusions are awakening?
What's your experience?
Well, in thinking just recently of this non-dual, that would be awakening. If we pay attention, if we're aware, if we... Mm-hmm. To me, one has to use them or understand them as that in order to let them go or become more wisdom, or there's actually is a process.
Yeah. I think that's true. And so here again, we have sort of the double nature of things, that on the one hand, there's nothing that needs to happen. Everything is awakening just as it is. On the other hand, we wish to be, and this is, I think, what you were speaking to also, Linda, we wish to be wiser, we wish to be more skillful, we wish to be more helpful, we wish to be more loving and fuck up less. And so that's also true, yeah? And so Trungpa, I've been reading Trungpa. Man, what a brilliant teacher. It's a good thing that I wasn't around when he was my
friend.
I'm right there. That's too hard on the back of my
Thank heavens I was not here then. Anyway, but but you know that there's that mind training, you know, that mind training is to wake up to what's here. So we are already awakening, we're born with it, right? It's the nature of that awakening is what's happening. Yeah? It's the nature of what's happening. And we are trained, and our training is to develop wakefulness through discipline, through meditation, through samadhi, yeah? The deep concentration that we practice, and the wide awareness, the shamatha and the vipassana, and through prajna, through knowledge, through gaining knowledge. Which is, I think, what you're talking about. It helps to have the wisdom of the ages, you know, to tap us on the shoulder and say, oh yeah, that's what you're seeing. And we're not copping out. We have to check it against our own experience. But boy, it's helpful to have somebody say a thing or two about it. I completely agree with that. So all of that being our way of moving with it. So does that help at all, Linda, to address what you were talking about?
I'm getting there.
Getting
so,
there.
So we want it to be either or, but you know, it turns out it's kind of both and. I don't know. But the, you know, I was thinking a lot about, you know, what helps us to realize this, you know? And that's really what I'd like to leave you guys with, because it's pretty much getting close to time to quit. I guess we have a couple more minutes for somebody to say a couple more things. But, you know, how does this help? Why are we talking about it? Yeah.
I have a question as to when in history did the teaching of Buddha nature become, in other words, I'm assuming it's a Mahayana teaching, because I don't remember that really being a teaching per se of the Theravada Buddhism, and that it's more of a Taoist kind of or influence from Taoism. I say that, you know, sort of not knowing, that's why I'm asking maybe if there's somebody historically, but I do believe that there was a point in Buddha's history when this Buddha nature became a teaching platform, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Does anybody know?
It's a Mahayana concept.
Yeah.
But probably didn't depend on China. Probably was already there in India.
Right, because it's really, you know, if you think about the Abhidharma, if you think about the stages of consciousness, and then, you know, that ultimate transformation. I think that you could see the roots of that there.
But to actually have it kind of come together as a whole
and be talked about that way,
talked about as Buddha nature,
probably.
I just curious.
Yeah.
You were just about to say, though, what do we do with it, or where do we go with it? What could you... Were you going to say something about that?
Yeah. I guess I have a couple of things that I just sort of noted. Practical kind of stuff, but it's not going to sound very new. Because we're just practicing the simplicity of being, enjoying the simplicity of being. And So you don't have to figure this out for it to be useful. That was one thing I wanted to bring in. If you think you have to figure it out, then it's just become another task of perfecting something. And it's not figure outable. It's not amenable to being figured out. So because how things are, you already know how things are. It's where you live every day. You know? But we're talking about this process of uncovering it, getting intimate with it, in a way. Getting intimate with our mind, with what how things are. So you can mess with it whatever way you like. That's part of the creativity of practice. Yeah? The sort of step up and try something, you know? And it's good to read sutras. It's good to study. Yeah? And learn everything you can about life and birds and, you know, and political movements. And, I mean, I think we just need to learn as much as we can about the whole fullness of life. Because that's not separate from this. This is about our life and how it works and what's helpful and what's not, right? And so, you know, study is one thing. And I think it's really essential that we develop our discipline of meditation. Because back to Hakuin, all of these things, all of these realizations have their source in meditation. They really do. It's where the experience happens. It's where, and this is why, you know, we teachers make such a huge deal about retreats, because you have to, it's really helpful to be able to soak in it. To be able to meditate through boredom and past boredom and beyond your boredom. and your discomfort and your irritation and all your other trips that come up in meditation, until those things just tire themselves out and you get to simply be. Because in simply being, something becomes clear. I think we need to actually, you know, keep being reminded, I need to keep being reminded, that there's got to be something in my life that isn't going to happen in order for me actually to have the discipline to do more meditation. You know? I think we get to ask ourselves, what isn't going to happen today? Because I really want to sit here for a while and not be just following whatever's the next thing that claims my attention. It's radical, actually. You know, it's a pretty radical move to reclaim our attention from all the things that are grabbing at it all the time. It's like, no, 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 this is my time. Yeah, this is a time when I don't have to be anybody. I don't have to know my name. I don't have to know your name. Yeah, and I don't have to get anything right. That kind of time. Time to just be. And we get to mature in that discipline as we do it. I'll just take 2 minutes more, if I may. And Trungpa again says, we all have the instinct to awaken. I like that way of putting it. We have the instinct to awaken. It's in us. It's our nature. Yeah? The more we get a taste of it. I mean, really, we got a taste of it. That's why we're here. Yeah? Mm-hmm. We're all here because we got a taste of it. Yeah? And when we get a taste of it, it gets easier. That renunciation piece gets easier. It gets easier to give up something else because there is something else that's not quite as interesting as this is. Yeah? And the more we get a taste of just being, the easier it is to give up what's in the way of it. And it's really helpful to hang out with koans because they speak the kind of language that can open you to the experience of the nature of things. Because they invite the experience, that's their job, is to keep inviting again and again and again, inviting us into that experience of how it is. And again, the time when we realize it, the time when I realize it clearly is the time when I drop my responsibility for getting everything under control. I know that sounds like an oversimplification, but for me, that is really my experience. The minute I let go of trying to get it right, of trying to get things to be right or me to be right, then it's already here. You know, but we get to practice that gesture of letting go, of trying to get it under control. So send your out of control employee out for pizza. And just wonder while the employee's out, what is here like for you?